Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today is the Giving Tuesday across the country, and here in South Dakota, here's how this works. It's the South Dakota Day of Giving, and this is your way to connect directly with nonprofit organizations across the state right here at home. So your Giving Tuesday energy is infused in the people and places right here in South Dakota. There's a landing page, there's a website, sdgives.org, there's a hashtag for the day, #ForSouthDakota, and that is where you can share the energy and participate in some of the challenges, the celebrations, the all hands on deck. If you want to be a donor, if you want to be a volunteer, this is the way to do it. We're spending our entire In the Moment broadcast today bouncing around the state and talking to all kinds of different people with different organizations, finding ways to help. We're going to start this hour with Stephanie Judson. She's Executive Director of the South Dakota Community Foundation. This is an organization that helps people reach philanthropic goals and really build stronger communities by making those charitable donations, have a greater impact. So, Stephanie, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Lori. And I just want to start by thanking you again for dedicating your entire show to South Dakota Day of Giving. I know this is the third year you made that commitment, and we just really appreciate it.
Stephanie, I'm wearing my T-shirt from last year.
Awesome. Fantastic.
It always surprises me. I mean, I love South Dakota, and I'm surprised at the energy that I feel personally and just the waves of gratitude that wash over me as I do this show. We've already cried. We've already laughed because it's just rare to have all these people in one place who are, God, they're so passionate about the work that they're doing in their communities. You see this all the time, don't you?
All the time. And it's truly the best part of my job and those that I get to work with here at the Community Foundation, getting to work with such generous people across the state, and then getting to work with nonprofits that are so committed to their mission. And I think, you know, now more than ever, Lori, we're seeing just a renewed commitment to all of the great work that our nonprofit sector provides across South Dakota in this unusual, unprecedented year. So it really is heartwarming. We can't live in a better place, and just very grateful for our donors' continued support of so many worthwhile nonprofits.
Yeah, and there's so much, donor and financial support right now. But what I also love about the Day of Giving is that people are inspired, even if they don't have a penny, to do something, you know, to be of assistance, to, you know, walk dogs at the local shelter, or to even just know where to take a raptor if you find one that's hurt, who to call. It's like you don't have to be at a certain level of financial giving to really transform your community through your actions and through small gifts as well. Yeah.
That's so important to call out, Lori, and you do a great job of doing that. Well, financial support is just one component of South Dakota Day of Giving. It's also about awareness and enthusiasm, about giving back any level in any way that you can. So
we all want our time, our resources, our donations to make an impact. We don't want them to be wasted or, you know, not put to good use, which is one of the first ways to do that is to know the organization that you're giving to and to think about what's happening in your own community. What are some of the other ways at South Dakota Community Foundation that you talk about impact?
Right. So, you know, the South Dakota Community Foundation has been in existence now for 33 years. We've had the opportunity to work with donors to accomplish their philanthropic goals, as well as communities to build local community foundations that support local needs. And then we get to work with nonprofits through our competitive grant making and help them establish endowments that can provide for their long-term sustainability. So all three of those areas of focus have impact in ways across South Dakota that are so important both to our state as a whole, but drilling down to the local level. You know, here today in Giving Day, we're really focusing our energy around helping our local community foundations increase their impact, partnering with them to provide funds to local nonprofits and charities in their communities. And those decisions are made right there in their hometown. And so that's where we're focusing a lot of our energy today, is making sure that people across the state have an awareness of those local community foundations, the work that they do, and the importance they play in supporting so many valuable programs in our communities across the state.
There are so many examples of this, but I want to talk about legacy. And for people who are thinking about the things that matter to them, the communities that they love, you know, certainly we've had donors at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. You know, I broadcast out of the Kirby Family Studio, and every day when I walk in there, I think of this family or the Leo P. Flynn Gallery, who thought deeply about legacy and how they were going to change the community for the better. What are some of the ways that people can think about their own legacy when it comes to the work of the South Dakota Community Foundation, and you know, lean into that? Like, how do you begin? Because that can be a pretty complicated thing, I'm thinking.
Right, right. And when you talk to people about their legacy, that can be an overwhelming concept too. You know, yeah. I think by and large, especially here in South Dakota, you know, donors are humble and they're giving back because they really want to support important work, and they feel compelled to do so. They've been taught to do so. It's often a generational legacy, if you will, that's been passed down from their parents. And so, you know, they don't think often about legacy as extending beyond what they've come to know and love. And it can be a little bit daunting to have those conversations with them, but they can quickly realize that the impact they're making today has repercussions that benefit future generations for lifetimes to come. And that's a role that we play at the Community Foundation through helping them build an endowment fund that might support not only their local community, but also any number of nonprofits and charitable endeavors that they've supported throughout their lifetimes, and that they want to continue support long into the future. And you know, some of our donors are even more humble than others and don't like their name and lights or associated with things, but we think it's an important concept to lift that legacy building up and use it as an example for others and remind them that at any level, you can give back to support nonprofits and charitable work through your dollars as well as through your volunteer efforts, as you mentioned, Lori. And that's all part of a legacy that someone creates.
Yeah, I think that's got to be really hard to quantify, you know, how other families are inspired to give based on the donation that somebody else made and have started thinking about that. It's just, that's probably hard to measure in some ways. But of the things that you can measure, Stephanie, like how do you explain the impact? Because I'm always thinking after a day like today, you know, what happens if these nonprofits are not supported? What is the pandemic going to do to their finances? Just like we worry that our local restaurant might not be there when when the doors are open and you feel safe going and sitting in a crowded space. I know I worry the same thing about people who are doing this kind of work.
Right.
Can you offer us any sort of, measure of just the amount of impact nonprofits have, or even just the South Dakota Community Foundation has?
Our
influential
sector. South Dakota's workforce, about 15% of South Dakota's workforce is actually employed in the nonprofit sector, which is kind of a staggering number if you think about it. And of the almost 6,000 or more than 6,000 nonprofits in South Dakota, 91% of those, Lori, have budgets of less than $1 million. And 61% of those nonprofits have budgets of less than $50,000. So you're right. You know, the pandemic has been hard on all of us, and nonprofits have been no exception. They're seeing an increase in demand for services, while at the same time, there's been a decrease in funding for multiple reasons. Now is a time to really, you know, reach out and help provide financial support to those nonprofits. They've faced decreased revenues in part because they're not able to deliver the programs and services that they're normally able to deliver, which is a revenue source for them. But also because individual donations are down throughout the pandemic, and then many had to cancel their annual fundraising events because of pandemic restrictions. So there's kind of, you know, several challenges facing our nonprofits from a revenue side. At the same time, they're seeing an increase in demand for their services on many levels.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
South Dakota Give. More important than ever.
Yeah. SDGives.org is the you know, home site for all the, and you can just, you know, you can go through, look by category. Is there something you're passionate about? Follow that thread and find the thing, or look by your community. Hashtag for South Dakota for you to share things that have inspired you and the services that you see in your community all across South Dakota today. And it's such an, it's a challenging day, Stephanie, but it's an uplifting day as well, because I'm always inspired. And a little exhausted at the end.
It certainly is. We so appreciate your commitment to the effort, Lori. I can't wait to hear more inspiring stories. There's a lot of people doing a lot of great things out there. So thank you very much.
We have got a lineup here we're going to get to. So thanks, Stephanie.
You bet. Take care, Lori.
Almost Home Canine Rescue is dedicated to assisting, rescuing, fostering, and providing a lifetime of love and care for unwanted, homeless, abused, or neglected pets. Their cat and dog rescue services in Sioux Falls pair local pets with loving homes. Find details at almosthomecaninerescue.com.
Let's talk about empowerment now on this South Dakota Day of Giving. I've been saying the word inspired a lot. Let's talk about empowerment with Jennifer Smith-Hazing. She is with MB, and this is a place that empowers women and girls and serves the community and enriches lives here in the city of Sioux Falls. Jennifer, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me on such a busy nonprofit day when there's so many great organizations to lift up across the state today.
Let's talk about the work of MB, because you do such multi-layered things in programs throughout the state. Have there been, of course there have been challenges, but what have been some of the challenges of 2020 and the pandemic for MB, and how have you been, you know, re-inspired by the importance of your mission as the need increases?
As we began the pandemic times on the 13th of March, that's the day I think of as sort of the last normal day before things changed, we knew things might be different headed into that next couple of weeks, and boy, howdy, were they. Since about April the 1st, we've been back open with childcare, and I think that for me as a nonprofit employee and a nonprofit with a sizable child care component as a mom to school age kids, that has been the biggest change. I mean, I never had imagined a time where there would be a limit to child care, or where we might see a change to demand, or what happened in child care facilities, and the pandemic certainly brought that. I think for MB, both with child care and school age care and our women's programs and our youth programs, the name of the game has just been innovating so that we can continue to meet the need, changing up where we needed to, bringing programs virtually where we needed to, you know, making adjustments for the good of the cause and public health. But we have been there and continue to be there so that we're there for women and families who need us to be a part of their journey to be their very best self.
Just like we are really only beginning to see some of the data and measurements of how, you know, mental health challenges are in during the pandemic, for example, we're just starting to see the impact on women, particularly women-owned businesses, women who are who have transitioned out of the workforce, women who are, as you said, you know, handling childcare and working from home. Let's talk about women-owned businesses, and you're doing some stuff on Giving Tuesday here, or South Dakota Day of Giving, for MB to support some of the local women-owned businesses in your community. Tell me about that.
99 years ago, MB was founded as the Sioux Falls YWCA, and that's a long history of serving women in the community. We've seen a number of statistics about the way the pandemic has impacted women in the workforce, about the ways that women-owned businesses have been impacted in this time, and decided this was an opportunity to share the spotlight with some women-owned businesses in the community. So the way we're conducting our South Dakota Day of Giving campaign today is, I'll just use a nice round number. Let's say you give $50 today to MB. Half of that donation will go immediately to meeting MB's most urgent needs. Actually, not MB's needs, but needs in the community. So those who may be having a financial barrier to affording childcare or other programs. Maybe it's just something as simple as you know, we need the right warm socks to meet a client's need at our Dress for Success program. And then with the other half of the donation, we're offering our donors the opportunity to pay it forward to a woman-owned business in the community. So for half of that donation, you can choose a woman-owned business from our list of partners, and you'll receive a gift card in a couple of weeks to that business so that we can sort of extend that support into the business community with small woman-owned businesses here in this critical fourth quarter for retail businesses.
Yeah, I'm looking at your list of participating women-owned businesses, and it just makes me happy because their Child's Play Toys is on there, Oh My Cupcake, Spice and Tea Exchange, Swamp Daddy's Cajun Kitchen. Yes, yeah, someone who lives and you know, eats and shops in Sioux Falls. Boy, I'm pretty happy with that list. There's some frequent stops on my week right there. Jennifer, I have a question I want to ask you about Dress for Success. So many women work, you know, employees and women in business are talking about how their wardrobes are changing in this new economy and thinking about when they go back to the office. And I'm wondering if you're, walk us through Dress for Success and donations, because people are cleaning out their closets and just rethinking everything with their work wardrobes and wondering if there is a way that they can help other people who are entering the workforce with some of those clothes. Tell us a little bit about that in just our remaining minute.
Absolutely. So Dress for Success is one of MB's programs. We have 42 programs across our pillar service areas. So it's one of many programs intended to help women be their very best and walk alongside them in their journey. Dress for Success helps clients, walks alongside women who are becoming employed, assisting them staying employed, and that looks a little bit different for everyone. So the clothes that are donated to Dress for Success can be business attire, they can be jeans, they can be black pants. Lots of different things are needed to be a part of women's employment journey. All of our donations at this point are scheduled. We've seen an incredible outpouring of support from the community. And as you mentioned, Lori, lots of people are taking this opportunity to prioritize their own sort of organization and take stock of what they need and what can be shared. So that's been an incredible blessing. I would just add, the greatest need we do see at Dress for Success at this moment is warm winter coats. You can feel the weather cooling down. You know, if you're taking public transportation or you're walking to work, a warm winter coat is really a necessity. And in the last couple of weeks, there was an incredible story that boggled my mind a bit about a client we served. We got her own winter coat, but she and her mother had been sharing a winter coat, and they would determine who was going to work when, who was going to go to the grocery store, who was going to achieve what and when based on sharing a winter coat. So that's not something to be taken for granted and a need that we can meet in the community right now today.
Yeah, that's a real impact. If you're the person who donates the coat, that means that's, wow. Jennifer, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
You can go to mb.org, the landing page for all of the South Dakota Day of Giving, sdgives.org, and share your stories with the hashtag for South Dakota. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today is our South Dakota Day of Giving special. And think about where the food comes from that ends up on your plate. Think about the connection between agriculture and science and history and economic impact in South Dakota. Well, we're going to check in with the Stockyards Ag Experience and welcome back to the program the great Abby Bischoff. Abby, welcome.
Thanks so much. What a wonderful introduction.
I should say you're executive director, but I just said you were great. So that's okay too,
I'll
right?
I'll take either. You know, maybe I'll combine and put great executive director as my name tag title now.
I'm pretty sure you can make up your own business card because, you know, you're the executive director. So.
Exactly.
All right. Really fun things happening at the Stockyard Ag Experience. And of course, we have to start with the great Jim Wooster, because when I saw the list of things you're doing, that's the first thing. I was like, I want to have coffee with Jim Wooster. Tell me a little bit about Giving Tuesday and what you've got planned.
Yeah, we have just a lot of great things planned today. You know, we started off today with a virtual coffee with Jim Wooster. So Jim just had a cup of coffee and sat at the laptop and told some stories and shared some of his experiences from his time at the Stockyards and, you know, what the Stockyards meant to Sioux Falls and what it meant to him and kind of the legacy that agriculture has built in Sioux Falls. You know, we are largely known as a healthcare and banking community now, but back in the day, agriculture was really what built Sioux Falls. So we had an opportunity to chat with Jim about that. We shared some costumes on our Facebook page just a few minutes ago here. Last year, a bunch of our board members donned an inflatable pig costume, but this year we thought we'd flip things a bit. And so we had a few friendly bovines that dressed up in a few costumes, not costumes, that we just shared on our Facebook page. You know, we're fortunate that we get to talk about animal agriculture and talk about the importance of animals. So showcasing some of those animals today was important for us. And then at 2 o'clock, maybe the thing that is building the most excitement on our slate of things we're doing today is a battle of the bankers. We have two board members that are I don't know if they're rivals or not, but I'll say it's rivals for, you know, the tension that it builds. Ryan Gilbert from the First National Bank in Sioux Falls and then Tim Scott from First Premier Bank here in Sioux Falls. They are going to do a little, I'll call it Barnyard Olympics. We're going to do it inside out at the fairgrounds, and they're going to have a little competition, and we're going to go live on Facebook with that as well. So some of those common chores that are done on the farm, we're going to have those guys do in a little competition.
Show us what you've got, banker man.
exactly. And I tell you the trash talk that I've gotten to sing back and forth on the text messages between those two today, it's been an interesting competition. So we're just incredibly fortunate. Our board members, you know, Jim's a board member, and like I mentioned, the guys that are doing that, they volunteer their time. You know, I'm a one person full time shop down at the Stockyards Egg Experience, so they really help make things come to life for us. Yeah.
So we have a statewide audience here, Abby, but I also want to talk about the Sioux Falls, you know, kind of moment and my connection to Jim Wooster, which I've, you know, told before on this show, but I repeat it because I want to launch you into sort of like the mission of this place. Is when Jim Wooster, you know, did the Ag Report, we used to just, when I was a kid, you know, you raced to your TV to turn it on to hear him talk. Right. And I went to school with his daughter and we just thought he was fascinating because we were, you know, we were city kids and it was our one time to tune in to what was happening in this sort of farm world that we had no connection to whatsoever. But that was the education. And so the Stockyards Ag Experience, when we think about South Dakota and we think about the city of Sioux Falls, there really are kids who grow up here who have no idea where their food comes from. And it's people like Jim Wooster and the work that you're doing that start from scratch in some ways and say, okay, what do you need to understand and why? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, when folks visit the museum, I often refer to it as the barn. You know, we'll often ask the question, you know, who here had grandparents that lived on the farm, and we'll have them raise their hands. And there's usually just about everybody will raise their hands. And then we'll go, how about your parents? And a few hands will come down. And then we'll say, and who here grew up on a farm themselves? And more hands will fall down. And there'll be a couple every once in a while. But it's just that visual representation that even in a state where agriculture is our number one industry, we still have a disconnect from the farm. I remember as a college student, like meeting some friends from Sioux Falls and them telling me they'd never been on a farm. It just blew my mind because it was so ingrained in how I was raised. So when we have visitors that come in and don't have that firsthand experience, it's our opportunity to let them know, you know, some of the basics and get them introduced into understanding, you know, that there are not only farmers that are bringing you your food, but there are frontline workers at, you know, meat processing plants or dairies. There are grocery workers and restaurant workers that are serving you your food or, you know, stocking the shelves with that food. There are all these people in this long chain that make your, you know, bountiful Thanksgiving meal possible or make that Christmas dinner possible or the fast food lunch that you get on your lunch break on Giving Tuesday because it's a busy day.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, now you have this generation of people who have no connection to the land at all and who are trying to get into farming because they have found something in there that they want to embrace as well. So it's a really interesting, you have one of those, you know, missions where it can be hard to quantify the impact that it will have on somebody's life, you know, 10 years from now. But you probably hear stories all the time of how it impacted them just that day, too.
Absolutely. All right. I think that's something that's really, really cool is that we get to do that and have those conversations. So,
all right. You can go to stockyardsagexperience.org and always sdgives.org to find out more, to check hashtag cowstooms to see some of those friendly cows and tune in for the banker smackdown in the barnyard later on. Heavy thanks.
Thank you so much, Lori.
The Helpline Center is the only accredited suicide and crisis center in South Dakota. All South Dakotans have access to the crisis line all day, every day. The service is free and confidential. The Helpline Center is currently taking COVID-19 calls for the state of South Dakota. To learn more or to volunteer, go to helplinecenter.org.
. 2020 has been a year of divisive national and even state politics. Well, where is the next generation of leaders in the state coming from, the generation of leaders that will unite and build a stronger South Dakota? We check in now with Billy Sutton for South Dakota Day of Giving. He is the head of the Billy Sutton Leadership Institute. Hey, Billy, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How are things going in Burke right now? How has the pandemic been, and some of the challenges that you're facing in 2020, from, you know, the tone of politics to you know, just the economic impact? Tell us a little bit about what it's been like.
I think the best word to describe it is just stressful. I think people are tired, they're, you know, stressed, they're concerned, they're just got a lot. You got a lot of things going on that is hard for anybody to kind of wrap their head around. It's just been an unprecedented year, and I think a lot of people are kind of over 2020.
Yeah. And there's a collective grief too, don't you think? You've had personal grief in your life, as have I, and then there's this collective feeling of everyone suffering and dealing with loss right now. It can make the very hard to pick your feet up in the morning and and move forward.
Yeah, no, it has been hard. I mean, we certainly had our share of it. You know, for those that don't know, we lost a daughter, an infant daughter, in July, and that's been really hard. Probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to deal with, and I've dealt with my fair share of challenges. And then you just start stacking things on top of that, and it is hard. But thankfully, the human spirit is pretty resilient, and time, you know, helps heal. But it doesn't mean that it isn't, you know, any less hard and challenging. And then you throw COVID on top of that, and it's quite a storm.
Yeah. I think I speak for so many people to just say we're so sorry and heartbroken for your loss, and thinking of you and sending prayers for you and your family as well.
We've felt the love. I mean, there's no question about that. Just the sheer amount of people that reached out, and it's been nice to know that a lot of people, you know, think about you and have your back. And I think the most common thing I heard is just a lot of people said there are no words to say. And that really stuck with me, because there aren't any words, but it's just the point that people are thinking about you and care that makes a lot of difference. And then one of the neat things we did too is we asked people to donate money in memory of our daughter Lenny, and we've raised over $20,000 to put towards building a community splash pad in Burke. And so that's kind of been our next leadership journey, Kelsey and I, my wife, in working on that project. It's something our community has wanted to do for a long time. And so hopefully we can bring a lot of joy to a lot of other families by maybe seeing that project actually come to fruition after several years of talking about it. So
yeah. I want to talk about this sense of the Billy Sutton Leadership Institute and the kinds of leaders that you are trying to create for the future, especially in a year where it is so obvious how divisive and how degraded our national rhetoric can actually become. Spending time thinking about what kind of leader do I want to be? What are the foundations of the kind of community service and public service I will engage in? Talk to me a little bit about what how you feel those intersect in a year like 2020, when we saw so much that people were just, you know, afraid to turn on their televisions and see what the next thing was going to be.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the style of leadership that we're promoting is just so incredibly important, and probably more important now than ever. When I think about, you know, losing a tough race where, you know, I really thought I could have a big impact from at that level of leadership, and how blessed we are to be where we are today and to be able to impact a number of up and coming leaders in such an important way is really kind of interesting. But, you know, the life journey that you follow and how that goes, because had I won the governor's race, I would have never had the opportunity probably to have such of an impact, you know, personally with so many up and coming leaders in our state. And so I have to look at that as a very much a positive. I mean, promoting the values of courage and compassion and, you know, just honesty, integrity, but probably none more important than service. I think that's somehow gotten lost in politics, and too many people these days do not go into public service to serve. And that's the most important part of public service, is serving the public. And so we really encourage people, you know, our leaders, to focus on service. And that's really the crux of the program, is that they choose a community engagement project and they serve the people around them with that project.
How do you stay focused on values that you have, you know, determined guide your life? How do you stay focused on that when, you know, especially when you're in public doing, you know, public service or leadership or speaking or leading a community project? There's so much coming at you that can threaten to swamp people. What's your advice you give these younger leaders to stay true to yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think the focus always needs to be on right now. You know, too often you can look far into the future and then feel really overwhelmed when, you know, whether you're tackling a project or it's something like the pandemic, you can look too far into the future. I mean, that doesn't mean that you don't plan, but you got to try to focus on the now. What can I do today? What can I do in this moment to accomplish my future goals, right? So what am I going to do right now that's going to move the ball? And that's really what I try to stress when we have conversations about that, is stay in the moment. You can't control the past. You can't control the future, but you can control what you're doing right now. And that always helps keep me grounded, I guess, in what I'm trying to do. Is just, and I'm kind of a task oriented person. And so if I can just complete, you know, the task in front of me right now, then it's a victory and I'm moving in the right direction.
A little time with Billy Sutton of the Billy Sutton Leadership Institute today, and you can find more at suttonleadership.org. You can link to all these nonprofit organizations at sdgives.org. Billy, always a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me so much. And I just would finish it up by saying, you know, people of South Dakota are so kind and giving, and really appreciate the support we've gotten, and encourage people to go, you know, support nonprofits, especially if you think that, you know, we like what you hear and we're doing good work, then come support our nonprofit as well, and appreciate the generosity.
Thank you. We'll take a break. When we come back, more for South Dakota Day of Giving, we're going to check in with Call to Freedom and their work for freeing people from trafficking and oppression. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, and joining us for the first time on our South Dakota Day of Giving program, we have Becky Rasmussen. She's Executive Director of Call to Freedom. It's an organization that provides supportive services for victims of human trafficking and sexual exploitation. Becky, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Lori, thank you so much for having us. We appreciate the opportunity.
I want to talk here on this Giving Tuesday. So many people are inspired and then occasionally challenged when we think of, you know, somebody losing a child or losing their eyesight or walking, you know, without a winter coat. You know, we get inspired and excited, and then, you know, we're brought back to a reality of what's happening in people's lives outside of our own. Your story is similar to this in the sense that it begins the Sturgis Bike Rally and this encounter that you had. Tell us that story, please.
Yeah. So in August of 2015, I was in Sturgis, South Dakota, doing an outreach. And honestly, I was just volunteering at the time. And we were outreaching to those people that we thought could potentially be vulnerable or exploited. Didn't know what that looked like. Until I had an encounter with a young girl named Marissa. It was about a 10-minute encounter with her. And in that conversation, I realized that I had just met a young woman in the midst of Sturgis, South Dakota, in a group of over 400,000 people that was very vulnerable, scared, but I didn't know her story. And fast forward, I know I can't go through the whole step by step, but in that encounter, we began to realize that this young girl had been missing and was found and then went missing again. And I began to ask the question, how do you potentially connect with somebody that is human trafficking or sexual exploitation? And how do you lose them again? And they began to tell me about all the programs that aren't in place for those that are coming out of human trafficking situations, and that there's a lot of gaps in services, and there are a lot of needs for a human trafficking victim to successfully transition out of the life of human trafficking. And that story, that encounter rather, moved me to get more involved with Call to Freedom and become a nonprofit. And fast forward to almost 5 years later, we've served over 130 new victims just this year alone. And that means that we not only just serve new individuals, we're serving individuals that are still with us. And so we are seeing more need as we provide a safe place for victims of human trafficking to come out. We're seeing more and more victims come forward. And it's so important for having services like Call to Freedom and our community partners in place for them to feel safe in that transition.
Tell me about Marissa's Housing Project.
Yeah, Marissa's Housing Project, we currently have a housing unit where we house seven individuals, but they're one-bedroom apartments. And about 3 months ago, our staff started talking about the need to keep families together. When your self-esteem has been devastated and everything has been taken away from you, it's really hard to live life on your own and for yourself. And so for a lot of who we serve, their children are what keep them going and are a focus for their recovery and their success in the recovery process. And so Marissa's Housing Projects, we're expanding to 12 units coming up next year in 2021. And that'll allow us to do one bedrooms, two bedrooms, and three bedrooms so we can really focus on offering that support to those that are coming out of human trafficking situations. Trauma is very real, and trauma requires a lot of support in order for them to be able to transition successfully. And if you could imagine being beaten, not only physical abuse, but mental abuse and spiritual abuse, overcoming that and getting back into normal life is very, very difficult for a survivor of trauma. And so Marissa's Housing Project is that supportive housing unit that really teaches them not only how to live life in a safe place, but also provide them with the skills to be successful after Marissa's Housing Project and Call to Freedom.
What are some of those first steps? I mean, you know, creating a safe place, of course, the physical safety, you know, food, medical care, all this comes very early on. What are some of the steps that you see go to address that trauma and help people believe that they have value again?
Yeah, you know, that process looks different for each individual. And that's one of the first steps that we do is we listen. We have a conversation with them. And, you know, we talk about safety and people have a perception of, you know, oh, they're in a safe place, but do they actually feel safe? Traffickers will control their victims through their children, through their cell phones, through tracking their cars. You know, really it's asking that conversation about what allows you to feel safe. And once they feel safe, then we just talk about basic needs. You know, do you have shelter? Do you have food? You know, just those things that you touched on. And then we start working on the recovery process, because if a person does not feel safe, and they don't have their basic needs met, they're not going to be able to mentally transition to that next stage of their recovery. And so once we get them to that point of, you know, basic needs and safety being met, we talk about, you know, what empowering them in the process to make decisions on their next step. So a lot of them medical, I would say 85% of who we serve need medical attention. So making sure their medical needs are met. I can't tell you how many survivors we've worked with that just came to us and slept for 3 days because they hadn't slept in weeks. And then once they kind of de-escalate some of that anxiety, that PTSD, that fear, then we can talk about, you know, what does trauma counseling look like? Have we addressed your mental health? You know, addiction, traffickers, a lot of those that are pulled into victims that are pulled into trafficking, they're introduced to drugs by their trafficker because it's a form of control. And so we have to address those addiction issues that were introduced to them by their trafficker for them to even get to the next step of, you know, finding a home or getting an education. And so this is not a short process. It's a very involved process. We've had individuals that have been trafficked for 3 months, and we had one woman who was trafficked. She was 61, and she was trafficked for over 50 years of her life. And so her program looked really different than the person who had been victimized for 3 months. So we really meet them where they're at, assess what the next best steps are, and support them in that process.
Today is South Dakota's Day of Giving. We've been talking with Becky Rasmussen, Executive Director for Call to Freedom. You can go directly to their website at calltofreedom.org or find a link at sdgives.org. Becky, much more to talk about in the future. Thank you for being here with us today.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for having us, and thank you to our amazing community for believing in the work. There's a lot of great nonprofits, and we're just humbled that people would choose Call to Freedom to support. So thank you for giving us a voice. We appreciate it as well.
Friends of the Big Sioux River is on a mission to change the way we all think about our relationship with the river. They want to bring awareness to the plight of this cultural, economic, and environmental backbone of eastern South Dakota. Loving the river is not enough. You need a willingness to protect it. Log on to friendsofthebigsiouxriver.org.
Before we close out this South Dakota Day of Giving special, a reminder, you can use the hashtag for South Dakota or go online, sdgives.org, to find all kinds of nonprofits in your community. We're going to check in now at the close of the show with the Front Porch Coalition. They're dedicated to helping those who have lost someone to suicide and reducing suicides within a community through education, awareness, and prevention. That is the Front Porch Coalition. Joining us with more, we have Bridget Sweer. Bridget, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
I was just reading an article about the number of suicides in the nation of Japan, because they count or they report their numbers almost in real time. So they can see what is happening with the pandemic and how it's impacting people in their communities and culture. And I want to start with you. with this idea of what a year of stress and turmoil and isolation it has been. What can you tell us about how that is impacting the work that the Front Porch Coalition is trying to do?
Absolutely. We have seen that impact our community. And those factors are all things to consider when we're dealing with mental health issues and suicide. In Pennington County alone, for our loss team, we have seen an increase just in the calls that we've responded to for our youth, an increase so far this year of 233% of the youth that are dying by suicide in Pennington County. And that is that's a tragic statistic. And so we definitely are seeing a need for our services and a need to expand our services as well for some of the preventative measures that the community really needs as well.
So it's important to note that it's, you know, every situation is different, and you know, we don't know what leads somebody down a certain path. But Bridget, a lot of people are afraid. They know people who they love, who they are worried about, and they don't know what to do. So let's talk about that for a minute. If you care about somebody and you are afraid that they are going to die by suicide, what are some of the steps that you can take today to help yourself process this and to reach out to others?
So one of the key things that we teach in our mental health first aid class that we offer to the community is how to approach those situations and hold those really difficult, challenging conversations. So some questions to be asking if you are concerned about someone, and you know, we advise be very direct. So ask them, are you having thoughts of suicide? And then if they say yes, then say, okay. In a non-judgmental way of accepting that information, and then ask, do you have a plan? And if they say yes to they have a plan, you need to get details about what that plan is, as difficult as it may be. How do you plan to do that? What do you plan to use? Where would you plan to do it? When would you plan to do it? And there's a couple of things that go into asking those questions. One, you can identify the level of crisis that they are in. Two, you've gathered as much information as you can when you call law enforcement, because then your next step is to call 911. And if you ever have questions about that, we recommend that you do call 911 regardless. They may be upset for a moment, but you might have saved a life. And so we understand that those conversations are very difficult, and that sometimes there is this stigma or belief that if you ask those direct questions, that you're going to place thoughts into someone's mind who might be struggling with mental depression. The reality of it is that they are already having those thoughts, and you're there to gauge how much in crisis they are and how much they've thought that out, so that you know where to take the appropriate steps to get them assistance to save their life.
It's so important to connect to resources on this South Dakota Day of Giving. So go to frontporchcoalition.org. You can go to sdgives.org to find out how you can support this mission and be part of the South Dakota Day of Giving. Bridget Swear is with the Front Porch Coalition. I will definitely have you back in the future to talk more. Bridget, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity, and we just really appreciate any support. Any dollar amount helps us.